All right, welcome back to the Forfeit Fatherhood Podcast, a podcast for fathers by fathers, where we talk about the four pillars of fatherhood, which are faith, family, finance, and fitness. And today we have another guest with us. Our guest today is Steve Anderson. Steve is married and has two sons. He's the former director of the Boys to Men Mentoring Network of Minnesota, where he led national and international transformational weekends for boys. He has over 10 years experience working with men and boys developing the emotional awareness and skills that they need to reach their full potential. He also has over 20 years experience teaching people how to become more effective communicators. He lived through his dad's spectacular burnout as a teenager and works with fathers to help them avoid doing the same in their own lives. He's a certified professional coach with training in applied neuroscience. I'm excited for you guys to hear this conversation, and I'll see you on the other side. Don't move.
Keep it locked. You already know. You are listening to the Forfeit Fatherhood Podcast. We're having conversations with dope dads covering the four pillars of fatherhood. We call it the Fit Fatherhood Formula. Faith, family, finance, and fitness. That's right. These dads are setting the pace in business and fatherhood. This show isn't only about the outside success. We're getting down to who you are. Gentlemen, it's time to get fit. And now, let's get into the show. Let's get into the show. Let's get into the show.
All right, welcome back to the Forfeit Fatherhood Podcast, a podcast for fathers by fathers, where we talk about the four pillars of fatherhood, which we consider faith, family, finance, and fitness. And I've got another guest, man. I know you guys love these guest episodes. I don't take any offense to it when it's just me, but... I know. The podcast was just starting to get good to you, but I've got something incredible that I want to share with you. And it's not just a program, it's a journey. It's the Present Provider Bootcamp. Now picture this: engaging video sessions, practical worksheets, and a community that's led by yours truly. It's a roadmap to excel in both your career and your family life. If you're ready to redefine your work-life balance, head on over to www.forfeitfatherhood.com. and join the Present Provider Bootcamp today. Let's thrive together, dads. You guys seem to listen a little bit more when there's other guys on the podcast. So I'm excited to have a guest today to share some wisdom with you guys. And you guys get to kind of be a fly on the wall of this conversation. So I think that's really cool. My guest today is Steve Anderson. Steve, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Rod?
I'm phenomenal, Steve. What's up, fellas? Hey, are you ready to supercharge your journey to becoming the best version of yourself? Introducing the Fatherhood Roadmap, the ultimate guide for every man. Uncover the secrets of success and 10 must-do principles. Focus your energy, guard your time, train your mind and body, think for yourself, curate your friends and environment, keep your promises, stay cheerful and constructive, and upgrade the world. Now, I know you're not going to remember all of those, and that's why it's in the book. You got to go ahead and grab it. Elevate your game, redefine your path, and embrace the power of positive change. Are you ready for the roadmap to greatness? Head over to www.forfeitfatherhood.com and grab your copy today. I can't complain. I've been working really hard because I'm working at a school right now. And we get on break on Friday. Like, Friday's our last day, and we get 3 weeks off. So I've been working my tail off this week. So I'm excited to have today off. I got to go in for a couple hours tomorrow, and then I'm good. What's up, fellas? Hey, are you ready to supercharge your journey to becoming the best version of yourself? Introducing the Fatherhood Roadmap, the ultimate guide for every man. Uncover the secrets of success and 10 must-do principles. Focus your energy, guard your time, train your mind and body, think for yourself, curate your friends and environment, keep your promises, stay cheerful and constructive, and upgrade the world. Now, I know you're not going to remember all of those, and that's why it's in the book. You got to go ahead and grab it. Elevate your game, redefine your path, and embrace the power of positive change. Are you ready for the roadmap to greatness? Head over to www.forfeitfatherhood.com and grab your copy today.
I get the school stuff. I used to run a school program, right? A circle for boys, and then for fun, I do some subbing just to kind of get that window into what our kids are going through. And those school days, they will use up every bit of your energy.
They absolutely will. And I'm in a mobile capacity because I work for a virtual charter school. So I live in the Inland Empire, which is like an hour or so east of LA. And I had to drive down to San Diego yesterday to meet with some students. And it took me 2.5 hours to get there, 3.5 hours to get back. So I spent 6 hours just driving yesterday, not even including the actual work I had to do. So I was a little gassed yesterday, to say the least. All right. So Steve, you mentioned it. You've been doing some amazing work. I looked at your bio, and I'm sure the guys can see your bio, but what is it that you do, Steve?
So my full focus now is helping men become better fathers. Right. So I'm doing that in a couple different ways. There's the coaching, you know, the one-on-one coaching. I'm also working on, I'm only probably about a month away from having my first guided journal for dads. So I've got some writing things and a Facebook page where, you know, those are kind of, you can just go in and get like little pieces. So, you know, that whole range leading up to this, I was a teacher at a community college for 20 years, English reading and a student success class. Right. And then I've worked with men for a long time. This is outside of the teaching. And through that working with men, that led me working with teens. And so I was started as a mentor and then ended up leading Boys to Men. It's nationwide. In Minnesota is a small nonprofit that mentors boys for about 10 years. And so I've got a lot of experience with teens, which involved going into the schools too, the last couple of years before sort of COVID blew everything up. So I've got a lot of experience seeing young people both struggle and thrive, right? And do great things. And one of the things that I kind of came through, I started working with men, then I was working just with boys, right? And on my students, I got to the point just this last year where it's like, no, I want to go full-time with dads, because I can't, it just, not only does it feel amazing, right? This type of work and just the joy you can get out of being a dad. So to help other men, you know, tap into their strengths is like, who's going to complain about that? But the need, I don't know if it's ever been more, you know, because as an educator from, and you know, I care way more, not just about boys, you know, but as far as if you look at boys without fathers, you know, more drugs, more crime, more unwanted pregnancies. And you look at education from kindergarten all the way to grad school, right? Girls and women are way outperforming boys. And so we've got this whole lopsided thing. And that's not good for the girls either, right? Because if they're straight, who are they going to, you know, who's going to be their partner when, you know, we have this little lopsided stuff. And I think, you know, is for us, for men to get the encouragement and the support so we can be the dads that we're meant to be is, that's the calling I was like ready to step into, you know, full time. And here I am, and now I get to talk to you. And you said this right before about doing the podcast and getting to talk about to other dads, right? It is a perk I did not realize getting into this, right? Is I've been doing podcasts, talking to other men, right, who care about their families, who have the, you know, the courage to talk about when we screw up, right? And the wisdom to go into the emotional stuff. It's like, geez, this is a bonus I didn't even see coming, but, you know, is nice.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's, you know, what's really cool about it too, is in these conversations that I have with other men and other fathers, there's a lot of self-reflection that I get to have as well, right? Because I'm hearing their story and I'm not living their story, but in hearing their story, I'm seeing different points where like I touch, you know, or things that I'm doing in my life kind of meet that. And I'm like, oh, okay, now, am I showing up the way I think I'm showing up? Or am I, you know, am I the man that I say that I am? In, you know, by looking at myself in this mirror that I now have, right? So I think that's one of the really good parts of having community as men and as fathers. And I think that's something that's lacking, because I'm pretty sure, and I don't quote me on this, but I saw what I thought was research, and you never know on the internet anymore because anybody right. can type anything. But the average man has three or less friends, like men, the other men that they would consider friends. And I got a bunch of guys that I call friends, like not like a bunch of guys, but I got a good mm-hmm. core circle of guys that I hang around that, you know, that encourage me. And I can't imagine just being a loner or being alone in this journey as a father and as a man, because those guys help encourage me. They help support me. They help push me forward. And so in doing this work and being a guide or someone that's helping fathers become better men, it is definitely fulfilling to hear some of the success stories, right? Some of the struggles and some of the overcoming and then using that to push myself forward as well.
Yeah, and that loneliness, right? I think part of it comes from that double standard of, or not the double standard, the double-edged sword of, right, we're supposed to be confident, we can tackle everything on our own, that whole lone wolf thing, but it's like, mm-hmm. but man, that's lonely, right? And then if we're married or we got a partner, all of a sudden the burden on our partner gets twice as much as it should be, right? Because we don't have our friends to talk to or to, I think some of the conversations I've had friends, when we laugh the most and get the most out of it, too, is when we're admitting where we blew something, right? And it just didn't work. And it's like it's a safety valve, right? Because if I can, mm-hmm. we say it and it's like, oh, that was stupid, and the other guy's like, yes, it was, and you know, you laugh, and it's like, and I'm not, and you know, what can I do now so I don't do that again? Or I'm not walking around with this weight on about, you know, how crappy I am. There's this one podcast, these guys out of Australia, and I haven't talked to them yet, but I listened to a couple, and I love one of the things they do is, and I know it's really important to celebrate the victories, but they talk about what's the dumb dad thing that you did. And mm-hmm. their whole point, right, is that so we can admit this, not to be knocking ourselves down or, you know, being incompetent, but it's like the idea of having to be perfect is I think terrible for us dads to try to, you know, if I try to have a perfect holiday, I can pretty much guarantee you it won't be.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I think the idea of perfectly imperfect, right? Like, and all the mistakes and things that happen, are going to happen. Like there's not a perfect father. There's not a perfect man. And having a little bit of fun with it and accepting it and learning from it and moving forward, I think that's really cool. And I agree. Some of the conversations I have with my circle of friends is we're joking with each other about things that we messed up. Like you blew that one, man. Oh, you're gonna be in the doghouse for that. You know, that yeah. kind of stuff is where we connect the most. And it's kind of like there's the one space where you can be vulnerable, right? Because mm-hmm. you know those guys that you're talking to are experiencing that as well. They're not going to use it against you. They may bring that joke back around,
right?
But you've already made it fair game by telling them. But they're not. You know, you can be safe, like you mentioned, be safe in that space and be able to let that go, release that pressure. Because I think that's what guys do is we hold on to everything, right? We take everything in. We hold on to it because, as you mentioned, the society tells us that we have to be strong and that we can't show emotion. We want to be stoic because that's a really cool attribute to have. But that also means that everything gets continued to be put in and put in, put in. And you do need to have some type of release valve or else you explode.
Right. Right. And that, and I think that stoicism that you bring up, right? I mean, it is so necessary. And it's when you pick and choose it, right? If I'm stoic all the time, it's like, what am I doing, Steve, right? But if I have something that has to be done, right? Or a task that I don't want to do, but it's like, okay, do it because it needs to be, you know, that stoicism is awesome, right? And I think, you know, any guy who's ever had a crappy, dangerous, filthy job, or you pick one, right? That's just, it's like, you know, that's what you need to go through and, you know, and get through it. But then how do we turn that off when we can be with some other men and actually breathe and, you know, and talk about those, you know, the fears that we have, or the, you know, the questions that come up. I think that's I think some people who are saying, because I think the APA actually put in their thing about stoicism being one of the, in one way, a negative thing about masculinity. And I was just like, okay, APA, you don't get it. You know what I mean? You haven't. And luckily, there was a guy who, a male psychologist, right, who put a big like 5-page thing going in there about here. There's some of these traits that, you know, are typically put on the male, and then here's why. Here it's useful. Look at the most dangerous jobs, right there, man. Look at the things that, you know, that we ask men to do. Not that women don't have their whole own set of stuff coming on, right? But there's, you know, there's a reason. We don't typically, right, complain, show our emotions, and it's not because we're idiots or don't have the feelings, you know? It's a survival mechanism that works so far, but then it can bite us in the butt.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? I was just thinking as you were talking, one of the things that it's like a common conversation that guys have with each other, and, you know, like, hey, how you doing? And the guy goes, oh, man, I can't complain. And the reply is, well, nobody will listen anyway, or nobody cares. Yeah. And I'm like, geez, that always stings when I hear it. Like, I've gotten away from saying it because I used to, because it's just like the normal reply. But like, that sucks. Right? Like, I'm not even complaining. I just want to tell you what's going on in my life. But if nobody cares, Jesus, like, what is a man brutal to do?
Yeah. That. And it doesn't take a lot, right? Some people are very outgoing. I don't need a ton of friends, but I need a couple, you know?
Right. Yeah, you need, funny enough, I was gonna say you need at least three, right? like the stats say you have three or less. I'm saying you need at least three, right? I need three guys, because one of them is gonna be on my side. He's gonna say whatever I say, and he's gonna roll with me. One of them is gonna challenge me no matter what I say. He wants to argue the fact, right? And then one of them is gonna cheer me on, right? He's gonna be like, yo, you can do it. You can do whatever you put your mind to. I think those are the three guys you have to find to put into your immediate circle. And then maybe you sprinkle in some other guys. You got your athletic friend that forces you to go to the gym. You got your funny friend that's always cracking a joke, keeps a smile on your face. And then, you know, you spot up with other friends from there. But I think every guy needs to have 3 to 5 solid friends that they can depend on for a variety of different reasons.
So how did you end up with the friends that you have right now?
That's really funny. My kids, actually. kids, because I have these different circles of friends, right? Like, I have friends from high school that I don't talk to a lot, but if we're in the same area, because I don't live there anymore, but if we're in the same area, it's like we never split up, right? I'm in a fraternity, so I've got my fraternity brothers that I'm really tight with, but it's kind of a similar situation. Like, if we're all interacting in something, we're all together. College friends, like football player friends, I got that group. But this group now that I really, really, really hang with, that I really bounce ideas as a husband and as a father with, they literally came from my kids. Like, my kids put this together. All our daughters were in gymnastics together. And it just kind of, one of the moms is a dentist, and she was doing dental work on all our kids, and we didn't even know. And I know you, I've seen you, like, and then our kids, aunts and uncles, where we've built like a really good community of people that are all like-minded. And I think that's really cool, because there have been others that have kind of come in and gone out, you know, just didn't fit the core, maybe had some different things going on. But this core group of friends is again, I got to thank my daughters. They put it together for me.
Now that I'm older and I've got my own boys, the role of sports has totally changed for me, because back when I was in school, right, I played football. You can't tell from this, but I'm barely 5'7". So I played football till 10th grade. And then it was like, man, I'm getting hit by much bigger people, knocked on my butt a lot. I don't think I need this to do 2 years, right? And so I played baseball all the way through my senior year, but small town, small team, there really wasn't, to me, that experience wasn't like huge camaraderie, right? Mm-hmm. For the team. So I'm like, sports, okay. My youngest is in tennis, and they have a really great coach who's, you know, the joke is when you see a fellow tennis player in the hall, you give them a firm handshake, you know, mm-hmm. and he really builds tennis is the sport. How you show up on the court is how you show up on life. And so there's just lots of, so you show up with respect and you work hard. And so he's got these, you know, friends from tennis, and the same thing in a different way is going on in band. So when I was in high school, those extracurricular stuff didn't have a big impact on me. So I wasn't really thinking about that as a dad. But for my boys, my oldest who's out, it was theater, you know? And so I think those after, those other activities, right? I've totally flipped on, not total, but it's from sports, you know, to like, holy cow, that is a great opportunity, right? For our kids. And now you're bringing up, yeah, right, how that can be, you know, just as good in another way for us as parents, right? As a intro into meeting some other parents.
Yeah. And the funny part about it is none of them do gymnastics anymore. They're all in different. One of them plays volleyball. One plays soccer. My girls play softball. Like, they're not at all in gymnastics. Like, we don't have to be around each other anymore. But it was just, we built such a solid community that it just works for us, right? And then the cool part about it is that there's a level of trust there, and so it's like a village. Like, people say, it takes a village to raise kids. Like, if me and my wife want to go out on a date, I've got 3 or 4 other couples that would, hey, yeah, we'll take the girls, and then we can, you know, and I feel comfortable with it. And I think with daughters, like, I'm very particular about who they're around, because the world is the world, right? And so I've got, you know, some guys that I know that will treat my daughters the way I would treat my daughters. They're going to stand up and fight and protect them like I would protect them. And then I've got, and they would nurture them and love them the same way that I would love them, and their wives are the same way. And so it's super, super cool. It's a phenomenal thing, and it just happened, right? It was nothing that I planned, because I'm a very, like, my wife says I'm a homebody, but I'm a very, like, I'll keep to myself. Like, if I'm cool with us just living in this house and in this area, and we just do what we do. But they've forced me, and my daughters in general have forced me to grow in ways that I never could have imagined. And that is one of them for sure.
Hey, do you think, does your day job affect how much energy you have after work, though, for being that social person?
No, it doesn't. Okay. But my multiple jobs do. I'll say that, because so my day job, like I work, like I mentioned to you earlier, I work in a virtual charter school. So I am the in-person component of that. So I have the fun job, as they would say. Field trips are my responsibility, so I get to go on field trips all the time. We do STEM activities, so I get to do science and blow up stuff. And, I get to do all the fun jobs. I do have to drive a lot, right? Because we have students all over California. So I do have to drive to these different locations, and that part sucks. But outside of that, it's pretty fun. I own and operate a gym as well. So in the evening, I go to the gym, but that is working with youth athletes. So there's a lot of energy there, and it's fun and exciting. Now, I have to be honest, at the end of the night when I get home, I do crash, because this is something I tell my wife. When you're a coach for athletes, for young athletes especially, it's like a one-man band, right? You are putting on a concert for an hour, right? If you're doing it right, you're putting on a mm-hmm. concert for an hour where everybody's paying attention to what you're doing, and you're putting on a show and you're getting the crowd to sway and move and sing and dance and do all the things that a performer would do. And so at the end of the night, after 5 hours of performing, I'm wiped out. But what I've found, though, is the way for me to keep the energy that I need to have in my family is I'm really regimented with my schedule. So that I can give each thing the time and energy it deserves. So when I get home and I'm home, I am 100% home. I avoid distractions, or I remove distractions. So that way, when I am home, it doesn't weigh on me as much, because I know I'm home, and then I have some dedicated time for some other stuff. So I don't allow things to too much affect my home time.
Okay. Yeah. And I asked, cause for me, you know, I really enjoyed teaching. Right. But when I would get home, and like, it would be the weekend, you know, and it's like, what do you want to do? I want to stay home. You know, let's, you know, maybe get crazy. Let's play a game of Risk, right? Family Risk, or, you know, do some stuff, watch some things together. I don't want to go talk to, I don't want to meet your friends. If we're lucky, we'll see my friends once every 2 months. And then I stopped teaching. And all of a sudden I'm like, hey, why don't we go talk to the neighbor? She's like, who are you? What happened? You know, and it was, and so since I left teaching, right, all that social energy of doing just what you're talking about, right, with 25, 28, you know, students and stuff, all of a sudden it turns out I am much more outgoing after work, right, than I've been for the last 20 years. But I wasn't even I didn't make that connection. I just thought, oh, geez, I'm introverted. You know, I'm just that, you know, homebody. It's like, I do love being at home, right? But it's right. Like, no, I actually was using everything up, you know, at work, not for the family, but definitely using things up for that, you know, that friendship thing. So I wonder how many of those lonely men, right, who, by the time they get home, you know, have the energy, yeah, right, to then go take that risk of going out somewhere and standing. Oh, my goodness. I think about being a teenager, right, or in college. I was not an athlete. And so standing around at a corner someplace going, oh, will someone talk to me? I mean, who wants to sign up for that?
Yeah, yeah. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I've been exploring in this series of episodes is about the work-life balance, or what I like to call work-life harmony. And you're right. There is each person, we're all human, right? We only have a certain amount of energy on a daily basis, right? Like, we're talking about like what we eat and fueling our bodies and the amount of sleep we get and all that stuff that kind of factors into it. But at the end of the day, we only have so much of it. And so if you are, and if your job requires you to expend a great deal of energy, then it is going to have some effect on your home life, right? And that's why I don't like to say balance, because you can't really balance the two.
Yeah.
You have to try to find some kind of harmony where they work in concert together. And so I think you have to kind of look at, you know, well, if you can realize it, or you recognize it in the moment, right? And you mentioned you kind of didn't realize it until later on. But if you have some awareness of it, you can kind of manage your time a little bit better, or manage your energy a little bit better, right? Like, how much energy are you giving at work versus how much energy you're giving at home? If you can kind of measure that, like if you put a number on it, like I'm a 10 at work. When I come home, I'm so tired, I'm a 5. Okay, well, can you be a 9 at work and maybe be a 6 at home, right? Like, are your students going to get everything you need are they going to get everything they need out of you if you're a 9 versus a 10? Probably, right? And your family gets that extra 1%. That's a great exchange. I would take that, right? But again, it requires some awareness and self-reflection, and maybe even some like time or energy journaling, and kind of figure out where you're at. So, you know, like, oh man, when I get home, it's because I would say I'm an introvert, right? But my family doesn't allow for it. They don't play introverted. Like, they're very extroverted. My youngest is the closest to it, and she's not really introvert. So for me, it's like, I'm being stretched And so because I'm being stressed, I know I'm going to be stretched. I know I need to manage my energy in a way that I can. At the end of the day, we got this thing with the families. We're going to, you know, the four families is what we call it. We're going to go do something with the four families. So I better, like, I'm going to go hard at work and I'm going to give them everything that I can, but I'm going to hold some because I know I need it for later. Or, you know, I'm going to do things in my life, like I said, eating and sleeping and all those kind of things to make sure I have energy to manage the workload that comes with being the type of employee, the type of boss that I want to be, as well as the type of father and the type of husband that I want to be.
Well, and I love the change from balance to harmony, right? Because so just even framing it that way, right? Because the whole balance is almost like juggling and what's going on. And from my personal experience, right, when I was growing up, my dad had no work-life balance whatsoever, no harmony, you know, at all. And he was running a rehab center and he had a nervous breakdown. You know, and so one of the things when I'm talking to somebody who's under that huge amount of pressure, right? And it's like, I have to do this. And it's like, man, you know, and everybody's got to make their own decisions. And I know that person feels like, right, they have to do that. But it's how long can you keep that up? Mm-hmm. Right. And I think, right, I can do a lot of stuff for short term. You know, and I think most of us, right, we can. But, you know, I think if you keep putting it all in at work, you know, eventually something's going to blow up.
Right.
It did for my dad because he didn't have that emotional awareness. So he couldn't put in the boundaries. Right. Or, you know, you're going to be so stuck at work that the family things are going to start blowing up because, I mean, our kids want to be seen by us dads, you know? And I think sometimes when I'd be working with the teens, it was, you know, bad attention is still attention, you know? And mm-hmm. when I'm subbing and I see a kid who's, you know, struggling or acting out in ways that you're just like, oh man, this is not good for anybody, you know? One of my first thoughts, right, there's the natural annoyance because, you know, stop doing a Nazi salute. We're not going to have that in the classroom. That's just stupid.
Right.
But what's going on at home that, you know, this is your, you know, your coping mechanism is to stir up stuff at school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you mentioned it, that bad attention is still attention. And I can say that because I subbed a little bit as well during the COVID time because teachers were not coming in. So right around the time they started letting people go back to school, I subbed a little bit in the middle school locally. And I don't remember middle school being the way that it is now, but it was wild. It was really, really it was the Wild West there. But I could tell the kids were just starving for attention, right? Like they're just doing things to get people to notice them, right? Mm-hmm. And then like as a sub, you've never met me before. It's my first day and I get it. I'm a likable guy. I think I'm a pretty good guy. Mm-hmm. But why are you so connected to me? Like where I'm like, hey guys, you know, this is my last day. I'm only subbing this class. You know, I was only here for the week. So, you know, maybe I'll see you guys when I come back and sub at another spot. Oh no, coach. Like, why are you like, I've known you for 3 days and first day you walked out of the class. Like I wasn't even here. Like now we're best friends. Like what? But again, it's just, they're not getting, especially from a male, right? Cause at school, most of the teachers are female.
Yep.
Most of the staff in general is females, like 70-80%. So you're at home and your dad's not as present as you want him. You go to school. Nobody there is even remotely dad, father figure type.
Yep.
So when you get somebody that rolls in, the father figure types on campus are the security guard, right? All the bad kids and the security guard are best friends. Like they have they love each other, right? They have all the best conversations. Even though little Johnny goes crazy and cusses out the teacher, he does it because he knows George, the security guard, is going to come over and they're going to go out and talk for a while. Right. And he's getting some attention. The on campus police are usually guys. You know what I mean? Like the only time they get male attention is when they have some bad action. And that gets some bad attention, but it's attention nonetheless. And I think you mentioned it earlier, this fatherlessness kind of epidemic, or the amount of fatherlessness that we experience is not just fathers not in the home. But there are fathers that are there, physically present, but not present in any other way. And I think that's just, for a lot of kids, just as bad. Like, I would rather you not even be around than for me to see you every day and you not to see me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the work you're doing now. Like you mentioned wanting to do some work or going into doing some work one-on-one with men and fathers, helping them be better dads. What does that look like? If somebody was wanting to maybe contact you about your services, what does that look like? What are the type of men you're working with, and what are we hoping to help them accomplish?
So if you want to just sort of get to see the program, you could go to steveanderson.coach, right? And that's the place that shows the coaching program. If you want to get a better, just kind of a look at where I'm coming from, the stuff that I think is important, I've got a Best Dad project on Facebook. So you can go to Facebook, the Best Dad Project. And when I say the best, I'm talking about being the best dad you can be in the moment. Mm-hmm. Right? Because it's when you're tired, the best dad you can be might just be keeping your cool, right? When something's going on. And so it's really about, to me, I think it's important that all of us as fathers, right, we need to decide what's the dad that we want to be, right? So if you're going through the program, right, it starts out with, you know, what's your vision of the father that you want to be? And then go through things like, so what are the skills that you need to build up, you know, in order to be that man? What are the obstacles? How do you get, you know, people on board? COVID, and I know this as an educator, right? Basically, our kids lost about 2 years, a lot of them, 2 years of emotional development, not to mention the educational stuff that they lost. So, you know, how do you help your kids get back to, you know, the new normal, where all of a sudden, you know, for over a year, they could basically just go to school and get passing grades, mm-hmm. you know, and so it kind of builds in that we don't have to do anything. And it's like, oh man, that's going to, you know, that's going to bite you in the butt so hard, you know, as an adult, and well, heck, even if it's a teen. So, you know, there's that program. The other thing that I'm working on is I really think, and this is where you can kind of, I think the idea is it's good to have a coach, me, somebody else, but you know, just somebody that, in those men that you can talk to. I also think sometimes we just need space for ourselves. So I'm a big believer in guided journaling. Like I like journaling free flow, where you just write whatever comes to mind. But I know for a lot of people, it's like, that's a blank sheet of paper. There's so much to write about. Whereas, you know, with some guided questions, you can really get to things that are important to you, you know? So like every morning, I actually, when I journal, I create 5 more questions, and then I'm cherry picking the best of them. And sometimes it's just practical stuff, right? Like, what's the one thing in your home that you've been saying you needed to fix for 6 months or more? You know, you're gonna, and then what are you going to do? Right? You know, because sometimes it's like, if I spent 20 minutes and got this thing done, all of a sudden this weight would be off, right? But I never get to it because I haven't had a chance to sit down. So the other thing that I'm doing is creating these journals. And the first one, which is almost ready for printing, is for dads. But I'm absolutely, and this will come from all my experience in the student success stuff, you know, coming up with a journal for teens too, because I think it's, you know, your own thoughts, a place to get it out. And it's awesome and it's great to have somebody that you can talk to. And I think that's hugely important, right? And when you don't, at least there's a place that you can start too. So, you know, things don't get bottled up, because I saw what that did to my dad, right? Mm-hmm. I bottled stuff up myself in my 20s. And it wasn't until my mid 30s that I'm like, well, this just doesn't work, right? And it is a bear, like for me, I never expressed anger, you know? So when all of a sudden I started practicing it, I was not good at it. So there's just this place where you get, I think that's hugely important thing. And one of the things when I talk to dads, right, that emotional awareness, right, is a huge part of it, right? Because, how can I be my best if I'm walking home and I've got just all of this rage from how I was treated at work, right? Or this sense, I mean, we got to, I think, you know, as dads, man, we got to do the work, right? So we can model to our kids how to handle joy, disappointment, you know, express love, all of that stuff.
Yeah, 100%. You know, there's a couple of things I picked out of that. And it's a couple of things that resonated is, as you mentioned, being the best dad in the moment. When I work with athletes, I tell them all the time, like, when you come into the building, you come in to train, I always want your best, right? Because if you're not putting in your best, you're not going to get your best out. But the reality is that on any given day, like, your best isn't always 100%. Like, you are on your fifth sprint, you're not running as fast as you possibly can run, right? You're maybe at 70, 80%, but I need all 70 or 80%, right? I don't need you to try to give me 100 and hurt yourself. If you only got 70, I need 70, right? But I need that 70 to be the best you can give me, right? Don't give me 70 if you got 100, right? Don't be good if great is an option. But if good is all you have, then let's be good. And I think that same thing applies to fathers. It's like, you aren't always going to be the super perfect ideal example of a dad. More often than not, you're not going to be that. But if you can be the best that you can be at the moment, and you figure out what that means, right? Which, again, I've mentioned a couple of times, is self-reflective, right? You have to know who you are and where you are and how you're flowing in your life. And a lot of that will come with journaling, right? Because it gives you an opportunity to, like, open up your head and put it out on paper where you can see it. It gives it some physical space. It gives it an address that you can come back to later. And you can explore it a little bit more. But when you know that, hey, work killed me today, I'm not going to be able to, like, we're going to go to the park. I promise we're going to go to the park, but look, I got about like 5 laps around the thing to chase you. Like, you know what I mean? I'm not gonna be able to do the normal 20 laps that we do. But I'm gonna, those 5 laps, you're not gonna catch me, you know? And then be okay with that, right? Be okay with the fact that you, because you gave everything you had. I know you could have given more if maybe you had more to give, but you gave everything you had, and that's what's important. The other thing that you've mentioned it a couple times, as you mentioned your father had a nervous breakdown. Was that work life related? Like, just work kind of compiled and then eventually, kind of pushed him over the edge? Or was that something that had multiple, I'm sure it did, right? It had multiple things that go to it. But what do you think was the straw, I guess?
But I just heard this from my aunt. So my dad died a few years ago. He always was dealing with anxiety from the time he was a little kid. So my aunt said, even as a kid, she was like worried he was going to kill himself just because he was so that anxious. So I think he came into life, and his dad died when he was 5. Mom would then bring in broken guys into the house, which, one of them, an uncle, basically said, "You're leaving, and I'll, you know, kill you if you come back," kind of stuff. So not a stressful, I mean, not a calm home. So I think he had a base level anxiety that's higher than your average person. And at work, he didn't know how to his way of processing it. And again, I was young at the time. His way of processing it was to go into his office and close the door, you know, and disconnect and be alone. And obviously that didn't work. And his job, you know, was stressful for sure. But and he's talked about this because it took him a long time, but he did the work. He was actually, and you talk about faith, he was angry at God for, in his head, taking my father you know. And so he had this, you know, complicated relationship because he faith was important to him, and he went to church, but he was also really carrying around this anger, which is just a really another sign of not being able to process his feelings. And I think that just bottled it up so long that it just blew up. He didn't have a safety valve, you know, a way to get that stuff out.
Yeah.
And on the so funny, not funny, but kind of beautiful thing is, it took him forever to kind of get his change his relationship to God. But the last 15 years of his life, he was a part-time minister. And he was there with people because he had a really old congregation. You know, it's like once a month, probably he was in a hospital with somebody who was dying, did lots of end of life stuff, just a few weddings. And, you know, so his faith was always important to him, but it showed up and manifested in different ways. And it was even the church that really kept the Salvation Army in Chicago, kept his family afloat in a sense when his father's died. So, kind of off what you asked, but I think, you know, with that faith, just to show that that growth and that change, and was something to, it was really valuable for me to see. Though as a teen, I would have, I don't recommend that path suitor, but it was as an adult being able to talk to him about these kind of things and, you know, see his growth. Because the way I see my dad, there was, he always loved me. Growing up, not a great role model on how to handle emotions, how to be present. You know, nobody's going to say that's the deal. Our adult relationship, right? That, once we got to about 30s, that was pretty solid. You know, and as far as, it's like, when I think about my children, I have an entirely different relationship with them than my dad had with me on purpose. When I think about them now that my son is older, right, the ones in college, and as they get older, I am totally using elements of what my dad did with me as an adult, right? Because that was, you know, that was really good. And so one of the things I think too is, as long as you're a dad, right, as long as you're alive, there's opportunity, even if you've burned some bridges and it's just coming from your side, right, that you can work towards being the father that you want to be. It's not over, right? It's the long game.
It's definitely that, like, you fatherhood has is a remarkable in the way that it has redeeming qualities. If you weren't maybe the man that you wanted to be before you became a father, being a father kind of can help you become that. If you maybe have things that you're regretful for as a father, as you're going to be a father forever for the rest of your life, so you have time to fix it. Now, I'm not saying, you know, blow off the younger years and wait until they're older.
Right.
But
no,
there is always going to be opportunity for you to insert yourself as the man and father that you want to be. So a lot of guys get down on themselves, beat themselves up, or they have regrets for maybe things that they didn't do or couldn't do, or even talking about work life, right? Like, just, I'm not able to be there the way that I want to be. And they get down on themselves, but, you know, there is going to be opportunities, like, for you to show up the way that you want to, if you stay committed to the process. Though, if you stay committed to being the best man, like you mentioned, your father ended up doing the work. A lot of guys don't do the work, right? We're just kind of like, you know, things are going to happen for me or they're not going to happen for me, which is, that's a kind of a, like, kind of a stoic-ish way to think about things, but kind of false stoicism, right? And in a way that, like, I'm not showing emotion.
It doesn't include your responsibility.
Yeah. So I think that is something that we have to remember and understand, is that there's going to be opportunities, and that we do, you know, we do have chances to make up for maybe some past things. And the really cool part about it is we have the ability to formulate or form the future that's in front of us.
Yeah, and I think thinking about the long game, right, and knowing that you have time, you know, if things aren't where you want them to be, right, you're going to set yourself up for failure. If you say, okay, well, I'm going to change everything overnight, and we're going to have a 180 degree change, and everything's going to be like, no way in heck, because everybody in your family knows you how you've been for the last X amount of years. So if you start changing, right, number one, there's no reason for them to believe the change is permanent, right? And what's one, you know, you go out and play catch once, right, and you haven't done it ever before, there's no reason for that, you know, girl or boy to say, oh, I bet we play catch every you know, weekend. It's like, no, that's not that we're going to think. They're going to be like, that's kind of nice. And now he'll go back to doing, you know, whatever. So, I forgot what I was going to, it was brilliant too, Rod. It was going to, but just gone.
No, I bet it was. I bet it was. Let me eat up some space and give you some time to think about it. You know what, though, you mentioned the long game, and that makes me think of Simon Sinek talks about business, obviously, and leadership. But then he kind of ties that to parenting being what he calls the infinite game, whereas there's no halftime. There's no buzzer that goes off at the end of it. You're in it forever. And there's this constant leveling up. There's this constant progress that's happening. Your kids are constantly getting older, therefore constantly requiring you to be different, be more mature, to continue to grow. Mm-hmm. And there's not like, all right, we got like six more years left. You know, there's not that. And so you don't have to go as hard, like you mentioned, like overnight changes, right? It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. People run marathons and sprints very differently, right? You're a father for a marathon. And so you find a pace that's comfortable, and maybe you pick up the pace, right? Because you're maybe falling behind the pace you want to be at, or maybe you slow down the pace because maybe you're too far ahead of where you want to be at if you want to finish this thing. But I think a lot of people look at it and go, okay, I'm 18 years to to get this thing done. And so they go at it in a sprint and they burn out, and then they're looking at themselves like, oh man, I'm not capable. I'm not able to be this kind of father for this long. I'm tired. The kids are driving me crazy. My wife's driving me crazy. You know, you burn yourself out trying to be everything to everybody all at once. Just like I mentioned earlier about managing your time and managing your energy. That's not just on a day-to-day basis. It's on a weekly basis, monthly basis, lifetime basis, so that you could be effective.
Yeah, and to add to that, right, all we can do is control our actions, right? And even if we're doing everything right, that doesn't mean one of our, you know, a child might go through anxiety, right, or a bout of depression, or their best friend dies, and so they're, you know, thrown out of the loop. And, you know, but we need to be consistent, right, especially when our kids aren't. You know, and for me, so I adopted my boys. And so I went from boyfriend, stepdad to legal. And I always wanted one of them to say, you're not my dad. And I'd hold up the paper and say, it's legal. You know, but we don't get into yelling matches like that. But, and, you know, when I became the stepdad, or when I met them, 5 and 9. And that age difference, right? 5-year-old, it's just different, right? Because divorce hits a 5-year-old different than a 9-year-old. And I've read, you know, one of the things when I started dating Katie was I looked into, you know, what do people say, you know, about being a step parent, and one of the challenges that is that if the child is like 9 or above, it's going to be a harder road, right? Mm-hmm. Because they don't see you the same way as if they're younger, right? And I knew that going in. And so for me, and when I talk about the long game, it's like, I was like, okay, I'm going to come in. I'm going to be there. There's certain things as a step parent, it's like, you know, mom's been in charge for a long time. I sure as heck aren't coming in to, you know, setting up new rules, and mom's the lead for, you know, for sure the first couple of years. And we got to the point where it's totally equal now, but And he gets to be him, and I'm going to be the dad that I want to be. And I said to myself, hey, if within 10 years he says I love you, that's success. Mm-hmm. You know, because I'm going to do my thing no matter what. And it didn't take 10 years, but it sure took a couple. and I respected that, right? Because who is this? And he had his biological dad ended up dying. And so there's just so much that goes on in life. And it's like, and as dads, I think sometimes we're just going to be like, what the, and what am I supposed to do? And I think sometimes it's just breathe, be there, show up the best you can. And some days, some weeks, some months are going to be hard. And that's the deal. You know what I mean? That's what we signed up for, intentionally or not. And the gift is, I was chaperoning. And I think out of this trip, most of the time my son, right, because he's a teenager and why the heck wouldn't he, see a dad, and he'd go off with the guys, right? And of course, so I'd get to see him like an hour a day. And, you know, at one point we're waiting for something, and he's just, you know, with his friends vibing, you know, and it's a band group, right? So they're all musical, and he's just there, you know, snapping his fingers to some jazz that was playing on the music. And I'm just like, how lucky am I, right? And just that, I'm like, you know, there he is being his own self out with friends. He's, you know, he's 15. He's, you know, right, becoming this man, you know, eventually. And it's like, man, it's those little moments to me are like when you know, I don't know. I'm just like, damn, I love that kid, you know? Yeah. And it's just those moments, right, are to me, that's the gift of fatherhood that you just keep getting whenever you can stop, right? Breathe, mm-hmm. see your kids for, you know, who they are, and that includes all the stuff, the stubbornness, right? The you know, the just, you know, the whole package, you know. And I'm just so glad, right, that I met Katie. I don't need that one. I met Katie, right, and have these boys in my life and get to be a dad. It's like later in life too, I'm like, oh, I'm glad I did not miss out on this, you know. The, you know, the hard times are definitely worth it, you know.
So with you saying that, then I think this is a good point to ask, what does fatherhood mean to you then? Because it sounds like you love it, right? Just hearing you talk just now about being a father, becoming a father, the way you became a father, it sounds like you enjoy it, but I don't want to put words in your mouth. So let us know.
Well, yes, I absolutely love it. Right. to me, being a father, right. It's really being there, seeing your children with love, helping them see themselves with that same love, and giving them appropriate boundaries that they get, that are always changing as they get older, that they get to bounce off of, right? So they're exploring it safe and exploring and safe. You know, I think that's our, and I think that just a dad in me too, right? I mean, we want our kids to take risks. Mm. So we know that when they're adults, that they're going to be able to go out there and handle failures, right, and still get back up and apply for another job. So it's that, you know, it's that love, encouragement, boundaries, and appropriate, you know, encouragement, you know, to take risks. That's what I would say. You know?
I like that.
Ask me in a month, and something else will probably happen. be flavored, but.
But that's fatherhood, right? Like the, it has a core, yeah. But then there's these branches that kind of stem out just based on what's happening in the moment, what's happening this year, what's happening this month, what's happening with your child's development, maturity, puberty, all those things, right? But at the core of it, I think you explained it really well. I had another question for you, and it's actually a 2-part question. So, I think this is what you're doing right now, but I just want to ask what if you had a message that you wanted all fathers, like all the guys, if you could get every guy's ear, every father's ear, I should say, because some guys don't care about the fathering aspect, but every father's ear, what would you want them to hear?
It's going to be okay. Right. Learn to breathe. You know what I mean? That learn to pause. So you can take a breath, and you love your kids. That's not going anywhere, right? So learn to breathe, enjoy the moments, and recognize that you're in it for the long haul, right? Which is a beautiful thing, which means that day that you show up at 60%, you know what? They're going to be okay. And the next day you get to show up at 85. And so, right, breathe so you can be present. Know it's a long game. Right. And it's funny because the things that we think our kids are going to remember are probably going to be something totally different, you know, right. They're going to say, oh, Dad, when you did that thing, that was really funny. Or that was awesome. Just what I needed to hear. And you're like, what? I thought it was, I gave you the big sex lecture, you know, that was not it.
Right. Okay. All right. So just as impactful. Right. A smaller group, but maybe more important. It's just your children listening. What do you want them to hear?
I love you. I have no doubt there are some things that I've done that don't make sense to you, right? And I just hope you know that everything that I've done, I have thought in the moment that was make sense and that was the good thing. And I am totally open to you saying, hey, Dad, what the heck? You know, and to have that conversation because love isn't about being perfect, isn't about being right, right? And my love is strong enough to, you know, I mean, for you to say, hey, Dad, that hurts. I didn't like this. Here's that, right? Please bring it, bring it in because that's, because that's part of the deal. You know?
Yeah. I like that. Okay, Steve, listen, if guys, you know, they've listened to the podcast, they've heard you talk, if they're wanting to reach out to you to maybe talk a little bit more or to inquire about coaching or really anything, what would be the best way for them to do that?
Oh, you know what? The simplest, if they sent me an email at steve@steveanderson.coach, right? Send me an email. And no matter what, and this is for everybody who's listening, I've got, because I believe journaling is really valuable, I've got a small PDF on journaling, right? Some guided questions that can help you get the most out of it. Send me an email, put 4FitFather. I'll know where you're coming from. And, you know, ask your questions, reach out. And no matter what, you know, I'll send anybody who sends that email, I'll send that because I really do think it's one of those things where you can, part of that breathing can be in a journal, right? And taking those moments. And I just want to get that out to, you know, to everybody free of charge.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it, man. And I second that journaling is extremely important, to have as a tool in your toolbox. Right. And as men, we should have multiple tools in our toolbox. Some of them may be a bit more aggressive, like a hammer. Some of them may be a little bit more finesse. Right. And I think the journaling is one of those things that gets undervalued. But again, like I said, you can get those ideas out of your head and maybe remove some of that clutter, but then also help to improve your productivity and also to help you formulate some ideas. And also, like you mentioned, to get some of those to do things on the list and like, just knock it out, right? Like, what are the things that I need to do? Oh, that, let me go do it. And I think that, like you said, lifts some weight off your shoulders. So fellas, definitely make sure that you email Steve, you email him and get that PDF and start journaling because it's going to be really, really helpful for you. And then when Steve comes out with his journal, then you definitely need to get that too, because it's going to just continue to get better. Like journaling is one of those things. It is an infinite game, right? Like I mentioned a second ago.
Yeah.
Something that you continue to do that never gets old, it always gets better, right? It always, like, because you get better at it, right? It's hard at first, I'll be honest. It's hard, especially like you mentioned, having just a blank sheet. It's like, I don't know what to put here. So once it gets guided, then you start knowing what to put. And then eventually you get to where, like, it's the end of the day. Let me just do a brain dump. This. And you start writing things down and you go to bed with such a clarity, or you wake up and you brain dump from all the things that you thought about over in your dreams. But then again, you begin the day with such clarity, and it's a magical thing. And I appreciate you for sharing that with them. And I definitely got to email you and get a copy myself, so that I can start, you know, incorporating some of the things in your PDF into my own journaling.
Thank you. Right. This has been a great conversation.
Yeah, 100%, Steve. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day. I know how busy life can get. So anytime anyone takes time to sit down and talk fatherhood and all the things that go in it, I extremely appreciate it. I know the guys that are listening appreciate it. The people that will see the clips on social media, those that are YouTube that are going to watch it are going to appreciate it. They're going to gain something from it. I know I am already taking things away from it. So I really appreciate you taking the time, Steve. Thank you. All right. All right, fellas, that does it for today's episode. I look forward to hearing you guys' feedback on this one, man, and what you learned, what you gathered from it. Make sure, again, if you need to rewind back, get Steve's email, send him an email. Make sure you tag or just put Forfeit Father in the subject so he knows. But I'm pretty sure if you just email him with questions, you don't have to put that in there. Like I don't need you to do that. Just email him and say, hey, can I get the PDF? I'm trying to journal. Or if you just have questions, I'm sure you can go ahead and ask those. Thank you, fellas, for listening. Thank you, Steve, for being with us. And, I'll see you guys next week. You just tuned into another episode of the Forfeit Fatherhood Podcast. Thank you, thank you, thank you once again for listening. If you haven't already, go ahead and follow me at You Can Call Me Coach on Instagram. Also follow the podcast at Forfeit Fatherhood, the number 4 and the letter U on You Can Call Me Coach. Go ahead and flip over to the next episode, man. I know you love this one, so you'll probably love the next one. Excited for you guys to hear it.